Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
The war in the Middle East, dominating conversations around the world, dominating the U.S. preparation for what comes next. At the same time, the United States and its allies are deeply involved in a contest in Europe. The Eurasian continent is aflame with two wars, and the expectation is that the U.S. has, the metaphor these days is bandwidth for both. However, I welcome Bill Raggio of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He's an editor and the keeper of the Long War Journal, which involves all of these contests plus what we can't see easily. That would be the war in Africa. That would be the war across the Eurasian continent between the jihadists and the governances, between state to state. Bill, a very good day to you. We begin with the expectation of Iran's retaliation. Promised about it, retaliation. This isn't something we're imposing on the Islamic Republic. The Ayatollah swore revenge over the burial of Haniya, the Hamas gangster responsible for October 7. At the same time, Hezbollah's Nasrallah, the head gangster there, swore that Israel would weep. Those two not only work together, Nasrallah works for the Ayatollah. So our expectations are not in any fashion self-interested. We're looking at exogenous events to the war in the Middle East and the war in Ukraine. Your measure of this last week of reporting at the Long War Journal, do you have any indication that Iran is backing off, that Iran is overcommitted itself, that Iran is not going to wait but obliged to wait because of the scale of threat, of counter-threat arrayed by the U.S. and Israel these last days? The fleet is active, air defense is active, the satellites are active, and Israel is extremely well-armed to defend itself and to counterstrike. So what is your measure of the Iranian Hezbollah threat right now? Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, John. Thank you. Yeah, so I see no indication that Iran is not going to attack, but the question is when will it attack and how will it attack? We've had twice during this period since the assassination of Haniya, where U.S. officials were certain, you know, we saw this in the press reporting, that Iran would launch an attack within the next 24 to 48 hours. Both of those time periods have passed. I think we're now into another segment where they think it's going to happen within the next 24 hours. That's possible, but it's possible that Iran is playing at its own game here, that it's not going to, you know, the fact is that the U.S. has arrayed defenses in the region, that Israel is ready for it. But would it behoove Iran to have revenge be a dish best served cold here and launch the attack on its timetable, perhaps when U.S. forces pull back? Is it exacting a cost on the U.S., on Israel and other allies by getting them to remain at a high level of alert? We don't know the answer to that. Only the Iranians understand this. They have to respond to the assassination of Haniya, but it could be done in other ways. They could target Israeli officials or prominent Israelis. They could assassinate them overseas. They could attack an embassy. There's other things that the Iranians can do. We assume that it will be in the form of a missile strike, a drone strike, just like it was April 13th, 14th. So if that's possible, but it's also possible that the Iranians have different plans, that they're operating. We tend to fight the last wars. And I think that may be what's happening here. I could be wrong about that. The Iranians may launch another barrage of missiles, drones, and other weapons systems, and even do it in conjunction with the militias. That's certainly possible. That's what everyone thinks is going to happen. If you ask me after the assassination of Haniyeh, I thought that was probably it. And then as I sat down and thought about it, and as time went on, I started to think, well, maybe the Iranians, they're going to do something different here and try and surprise us.
I mentioned, Bill, when I flagged the fleet, it's not just surface warfare that's out there now, carriers with their air wings. The U.S. wanted us to know that they deployed one of their guided missile submarines, Ohio, or another boat like it, filled with cruise missiles. So what we have now is that the U.S. has enough firepower in there to essentially end Islamic Republic of Iran's probability of success. Just end it. And we would not ordinarily wait on the enemy. We would fire first whenever we thought that the preempt was successful. You first take out the air defense, then you decap, and then you go for the remains of the regime. That's what a missile boat with an air wing can do. Iran knows this. Iran is not a sophisticated air defense power. They've not had to put up with that all these years of provocations. We're looking at a defenseless regime. That conversation with Shoigu the last week, we don't have any reason to believe that there wasn't also cooperation. But Iran was looking for S-300 systems, which is not the best of the Russian stuff. But in any event, an S-300 system was what Israel took out with one strike last April, and Iran never saw it coming. So the puzzle here is, who is taking advantage of this moment with the world waiting? Bill, I'm going to be suspicious. Is Ukraine taking advantage of this? We have no attention to Ukraine after 2 years of constraining the strike back by the Kyiv regime. 2 years of it. And I do not hear, unless you hear, Bill, and we'll discuss this later today, I do not hear the administration saying, don't attack Russia, don't use long-range missiles, don't use the F-16s to strike into Russia. Is that taking advantage of this pause in the Middle East? These two wars come together when Shoigu sat with the new president of Iran. What's your intuition, Bill?
Yeah, I think the administration has been wholly silent on Ukraine, which is just quite odd, particularly after this invasion into Russia to take control of territory in the Kursk region. Ukrainians are using U.S. weapons. We've seen pictures of Stryker armored vehicles and other weapons systems being deployed into Russia. So if the Biden administration is upset or disagrees about the Ukraine using American-made weapon systems offensively into Russia, it certainly isn't saying anything about it publicly. I think the Ukrainians have taken advantage of, there's a confluence of issues here, weakness that they detected along the border by the Russians. I think the Ukrainians need a political victory to show that it can have success against Russia, given the way it's taking a beating in the east and the Donbas region in eastern Ukraine. And then the timing of this as the administration's trying to get a ceasefire in Gaza. And so when you put all that together, it worked well for the Ukrainians to take advantage of this gap, this sort of window there where the administration, and then you have a political season as well, right? With Biden's withdrawing from the race, he's not been public on any of these issues when it comes to national security and foreign affairs. So the Ukrainians, I believe, John, you're right that they've taken advantage of this time in order to launch an attack. And we could talk about the efficacies and the long range implications of that later, but it's done.
We're going to continue this conversation with colleagues, Joe Truesman and John Hardy. We're going to turn now to a conversation that Bill and Joe Truesman had with the West Pointer, Preston Stewart, who routinely reports on all the wars, kinetic warfare. He's a graduate of West Point, the 101st Airborne, seen a lot of kinetic warfare in Afghanistan. Your conversation with Preston was of interest to me in two parts. One, how he measures the war, and two, how you and Preston and Joe and others at FTT measure social media as a way of reporting. Let's begin with the war fighting. Right now, Preston Stewart is observing what we are. Hamas looks beaten, Bill. Is that the position that you understand he believes to be accurate?
Yeah, I think that is correct. I mean, Hamas taking hits with top commanders, including Ismail Haniyeh and Mohammed Deif, the military commanders. Israel, within the last several months, took out the top military commander and the overall leader of Hamas. They've taken out numerous other senior Hamas leaders. They've attrited Hamas's battalions, its brigades, significantly. Yet, I think I could speak for Preston here. It's not over, right? There are still significant amount of Hamas fighters, and there's significant support for Hamas within the Palestinian population. So Hamas politically and as an organization is hurt, but it is by no means at this point defeated. There's still a lot of work to be done by the Israelis to lead to defeat. The hostages are still being held, and occasionally, more than occasionally, almost routinely, Hamas is still able to get rockets off, launched against Israel. It's not every day. It's not in the hundreds, but they still have capacity. So until Hamas is militarily defeated, the Israelis have a lot of work to do, but they're certainly on a good path.
Two parts of the Ring of Fire. Do you measure that the Houthis or the Kataib Hezbollah are a major threat right now, given the scale of what Hezbollah can launch out of Lebanon? How to look at the Houthis? It's almost opportunity fire with them, the harassing. And the Kataib Hezbollah shows up now and again. You figure it's under orders to deploy and fire at the U.S. forward bases in Jordan and Syria and Iraq, that triangle there at the border. So do you watch either of those groups more than any other? Are they both representative of just the Ring of Fire's augmenting?
So the Houthis would be the one. Look, they've shut down international shipping. The shipping is down almost 90% through the Suez Canal. They are punching way above their weight, and it's because we're allowing them to. The U.S. is restraining itself. The international community just doesn't seem interested in trying to meaningfully defeat the Houthis. And you even had a U.S. U.S. admiral come out and say, we're failing against the Houthis. We're not beating them. And this is not a strategy that can succeed. And he's absolutely correct. The Houthis, we're coming up on a year. By December, it will be 1 year for the Houthis to have launched attacks on shipping. So they are significant. Are they a direct threat to Israel? It's a minor threat to Israel. They did get a drone through and kill an Israeli civilian in Tel Aviv. So it is certainly a threat, but not the threat posed by Hezbollah and Hamas and the groups closer in. As far as Kataib Hezbollah or Hezbollah Gates, not to be confused with Lebanese Hezbollah, it's an Iraqi group. It is representative of a bunch of other militias in Iraq. There's all, the League of the Righteous, there's Asib al-Haq, and there's a whole bunch of them. I could, spend half the segment just listing the names of these Iranian-backed militias. The attacks are back on against U.S. bases. There have been at least 10 of them over the last several weeks after a lull when three U.S. soldiers were killed. Several U.S. servicemen have been wounded in these attacks. It seems that the Biden administration really isn't interested in doing anything meaningful on that front unless an American soldier is killed. And then we're back to the where is the Biden administration when it comes to foreign policy and foreign affairs.
Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, keeping the Long War Journal. I'm John Bannon.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. From plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
This is Kristen Davis from Are You a Charlotte? For timeless style that still feels fresh and modern, Tuckernuck has become a favorite shopping destination. From elevated classics like denim, striped tees, and crisp button-downs, to chic looks for weddings, vacations, and everyday life, Tuckernuck makes getting dressed effortless. Plus, they curate an incredible mix of brands, with new arrivals dropping daily. Visit tnuck.com and use promo code IHEART for 15% off a first purchase.
This is Ashley Iaconetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. You know that moment when you're in your stylist chair and you're describing your dream hair like it's a Pinterest board come to life, but you have zero idea how to make it happen at home? That is my Roman Empire. But Amiga totally gets it. Their clean, vegan, cruelty-free, clinically proven formulas are why stylists swear by them. I'm obsessed with the Wizard Detangling Primer. It's like a magic spell for my hair. For a limited time, save 15% off your order with code FAMOUS15 on loveamika.com. Restrictions may apply.